You're about to hear an interview that went much longer than any three of us intended. How long did you think we would be talking with our interviewee, Father Bernie Georges?
Again, we had booked 30 minutes. I assumed 45, and I had booked that as far as the meetings that I had the rest of the day.
When I arranged it, he told me we had a 3:30 appointment, and in the back of my mind, I'm like, okay, that's good. That's good, because then we have to stop by 3:15. But Father Bernie, in the gracious efforts of God, showed up to here and told us that his 3:30 had been canceled, and he didn't have to be anywhere until 5 o'clock.
And we used all of that time is the best way to say that.
And it's all great stuff. Just we want to give you a heads up. Buckle up.
Yeah.
It's a ride.
It was tremendously enjoyable. And if those of you who know Bernie will hear things you've never heard before, those of you who don't know Father Bernie are in for a real treat of a man who's been a pillar of this diocese, this Amen. Community, and really our nation, actually, and what Totus Tuus has done.
Yeah.
It's a three-parter. And so you'll hear today.
It did not start off as a three-parter, but you cannot contain the wonder that is Father Bernie Georges.
And we didn't even want to try. We did not try.
So our point then is enjoy this one. Enjoy the next few. We tried to keep it in the reins, but good. It's good. And I'm glad Father Bernie's a great gift to our diocese.
There are definitely stories I'd never heard before. So it's enjoy. It's a good three episodes, but it is three episodes. So to be continued.
Have fun.
I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to his voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. We are coming to you from the studio of St. Bernard of Clairvaux. I am assisted by fellow Totus Tuus teachers of the past, Father Garrett Burns.
God is good.
And Father Drew Hoffman.
Let's go.
And not only am I helped by former Totus Tuus teachers, we are joined today, blessed by the founder of Totus Tuus, Father Bernie Georges. Welcome, Bernie.
This is awesome, but your voice sounds a little PBS.
He started laughing as soon as you started talking.
Like, oh my goodness. You know, this is crazy.
Well, for $20, we'll give you a tote bag on your way out.
With supporters like you. Thank you very much.
Now, currently, you are pastor of St. Joseph of Ost, Kansas.
Ost, Kansas. It's right on the east side of Lake Cheney.
You know how many people I have talked to that think that that's a saint, like St. Joe Ost, not like St. Joe of Ost, St. Joe Ost.
Well, it is the Holy Land, brother. So.
There's St. Joe Ost, there's St. John Clonmel.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
And there's the great St. Peter Schulte.
Exactly.
All of which you have connections to. Yes. Yes.
And people have complained, you know, they said, Father, you know, when I was in Chanute, they said, you know, you always called Chanute the Holy Land. I said, well, now you're saying Schulte is the Holy Land, St. Ost is the Holy Land.
You always
say, it's wherever I am.
You famously always called Manhattan the Holy Land, too, if I remember correctly.
Now, where all have you served at? What year were you ordained?
I was ordained in 95, and I spent 2 years as an associate at All Saints Parish and at Southeast Wichita, and then 3 years resided at the cathedral as I taught at Cape of Mount Carmel, other school on the other side of town, and then 9 years in Winfield, America, Cali County, and had two parishes, a Holy Name Winfield and St. Mary's Oxford, small little mission parish, and then 5 years in Chanute, Kansas, in Neosho County, and also served St. Joseph Humboldt in Allen County. And then 8 years, St. Peter's in Schulte, Kansas, as just south of the airport. And then now here, last 8 months, Ost. Fantastic.
I feel like I want to point out that we tried to get on this podcast the current pastor of Winfield, Kansas, and he wouldn't do it.
Is that right?
And so you are here. So as I'm concerned,
okay. I'm second fiddle.
You are the
second fiddle.
Well, you're the best pastor Winfield's known, because at least you'll come on the podcast. So I'm just going to throw that out there.
Thank you, Clay.
I have heard that. I want to see if this is true. At Ost, have you begun to sleep on a bed, an actual bed?
You would not believe life-changing.
I lived for a summer.
In September 9th of 1984, I had a car accident. I hit a bridge.
Now who sounds like they're on PBS?
And yeah. Then, but what was amazing is that I've never been able to sleep more than 4 hours in a bed. And so I discovered a recliner, a Lazy Boy recliner, about 50-year-old vintage. And it was just like
it's perfect. A great year.
Yes, and it was like perfect. I can just sleep in it. So anything made in the late 60s, early 70s, I slept in a Lazy Boy recliner. Not the new ones, the old ones.
That is the strangest precision I think I've ever heard for a
Brother, it's just phenomenal. Anyway, so I would go search for them, and I'd purchase one. Always have one, and you know, because you wear them out, you know, and stuff. But anyway, so yes, I went to St. Joe Ost, and I sat down on this bed, and I had my, you know, recliner or two out in the garage, you know, ready to move on in. And I sat down on the bed, and all of a sudden, I just began to sink. It's like a memory foam of some sort whatever. And I said, well, I'm going to try it one night, you know. Boom. 8 hours, no awakening. My back didn't hurt. It was just like, oh, I'm going to try it again. Well, call me Rip Van Winkle. I slept 90 days. 90 days in a bed straight, man. It was like amazing. And so, I mean, it's just like, and I threw my recliners away.
Wow.
Yeah, that's really, it was kind of emotional.
Anyway. I think it's the intercession of St. Joe Ost, patron saint of memory foam, I believe.
You hadn't thought about trying other types of
mattresses? This is what I'm wondering.
I don't understand. Well,
I feel like that would be my first go-to.
If it works, it works.
Rather than 1960s recliner, maybe I'll just try a different type of mattress.
Well, no, no. I knew what worked. I knew what worked. Yeah. You know, I mean, it was awesome. I always slept well. And I could knock down, you know, 7-8 hours. Pretty easy in a recliner. And, but it was just, a recliner.
And you said that accident happened in
84. Yeah. So, I mean, like I would sleep in a bed,
right?
That'd be no problem, but you get 4 hours and your back would just be screaming at you and wake you up. And
Cause did you sometimes, maybe I'm misremembering this. Did you travel at times like the recliner loaded into the vehicle?
Yeah, I did.
What?
I did.
Yeah. Yes. I feel like I've been on a few excursions.
When I have to spend a week somewhere, I would throw the recliner in the back of my van and find a place and bring my recliner into my hotel room or my wherever I'm staying and just bring that recliner. And I'm a little odd.
You are
not like a satchel. It's a recliner.
But you know, whenever there's a bed, I always try the bed and then usually boom. Okay. Yeah. It doesn't work. But anyway,
Gary, you lived with Bernie for
a summer.
Any memories?
When was that?
Well, let's see. After First Theology, so whatever that would have been. Yeah, he was at Schulte. Yeah,
you and that priest down in
Winfield. Yeah, what's his face? Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, that was what made me think of it, because I never saw him sleep in a bed. He had his recliner. And what was always funny was sometimes Clay and I, we would get back a little late. And we're like, we're kind of tiptoeing inside. And then Bernie's up. He's like, hey, guys, you know, you want a drink or like, check out this podcast I'm listening to? All this stuff.
But I mean, that's another thing, too, is that, you know, sleep was a little bit overrated in those days. But now I really respect it. It's really kind of.
You've earned it.
Really kind of cool. But, you know, we had this saying. Working on the dairy, sleep is for wimps.
Sleep is for wimps.
That's a terrible saying.
It is a terrible saying.
Pope Benedict would argue with that. He's a big fan of sleep.
But he wasn't around.
JP2, I don't think, was much of a sleeper. Benedict liked to sleep.
But no, usually 4 or 5 hours is, you know, 6 hours, something like that. But then that rare occasion when you can knock out more, I always thought that was. But once I've got a taste of amazing rest. Wow. Don't tell the bishop. Hopefully nobody will tell
no,
the bishop.
Nobody listens to this.
Nobody.
I heard there's like 15 followers or something like that.
Yeah. And they're all blood relations of us three.
But anyway, no, it is just like, whoa. It's like a whole new lease on life. It's like, boom, this is retirement.
That's awesome.
This is awesome.
Good for you.
Were you trying to pull another memory out of me there, Drew?
No, there isn't. We won't share that story, which is an all-time funny story that you'll have to ask us personally to hear a story about Father Garrett's time at. We might have to cut all of this out. That's so funny. You don't get a lot of sleep. Which
I used to not. Yeah. Now it's just like beautiful.
But that's why you look so good.
Yeah.
I mean, you can tell.
And the beard's just the right color of white.
Yes.
It's a rich white. Mm-hmm. You don't get a lot of sleep. Which makes
used
sense.
To not. Used to not.
You don't know that. Yeah. Considering everything that you've gotten done over these last, what, 28 years of priesthood?
Almost 28, yes.
What are a couple of things that you've done or started here in this diocese in these 28 years or at K-State? As I know, you've started something there.
Wow. Yeah. Well, it really goes back to, okay, so when I graduated high school in 83.
Where'd you go to high school?
Clearwater High.
Okay.
Public school.
Mm-hmm. What's Clearwater's mascot?
Indian.
Oh, still?
It's still.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. All right. Yes. It's kind of, nowadays it's more of a suburb of Wichita.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
You call it a bedroom city. Back then there was a lot of agriculture kids, you know, and so we fit right in from Clonmel, and it's only 7 miles from Clonmel. So, but when I graduated there, I went to a farm and ranch management school down in Coffeyville, and on my way down to Coffeyville, you had passed through these little tiny towns, and there was no 400 back then. It was 96 that went through every single small town in South. It was treacherous. I mean, it took you forever. But so no big speedway. Anyway, so you go through these small little towns. Every single Protestant church still had up their vacation Bible school banners that they invited kids, you know. And I thought, well, you know, it's kind of weird. The Catholic Church doesn't have anything like that, you know. Well, with that kind of churning within my mind, I said, you know, we as Catholics, we have to have some sort of response to that, because I heard that there's Catholic kids going to other denomination vacation Bible school because it's, well, free babysitting or whatever, you know, and it's fun and, you know, entertainment. So that was in 83. And I had noticed that my Catholic education, because I never stepped a foot in Catholic school until I went to seminary. Even then I questioned, but anyway, you could cut that out maybe, but I realized I didn't know my faith, and because I didn't know my faith. Yeah. So I, for something within me, I started doubling down. And if I can make a short story long, cause I never, never tell a short story, but,
I'm sure this podcast will go over 30 minutes, but it's all good.
There was this priest at Clonmel when I was 17 years old. He called us in. He was going to speak on marriage. And this is when our PSR program, we called it CCD back then. And they were juniors and seniors. I was a junior at the time. And he said, okay. And there was like maybe 7, 8 of us. He says, okay, we'd like to begin with the Apostles' Creed. And we all started out. I believe in God, the Father Almighty, creator of heaven, earth. And there was this girl that had gone to up to 6th grade Catholic school.
Yeah.
And she just kept on going. We all other ones, we were like, we have no clue. Father lost, blew a gasket, and he kicked us out.
Seriously?
He says, get out. If you don't know the Apostles' Creed, here you are, juniors and seniors in high school. If you don't know the Apostles' Creed, get out. You're wasting my time. To give him a fair shake, there might have been a ball game going on. So I don't know. But all I remember is that very night, I was so embarrassed, irritated. My pride was probably kicking up a little bit. And so I found an old catechism, an old Baltimore catechism on the old shelf, dusted it off at home. And I knelt down by my bed and I kept going over and over and over and over the Apostles' Creed. In 45 minutes, I had it memorized and I have it to this day. But I wouldn't have done that if he didn't tee me off or embarrass me or whatever that emotion was, you know, at that time. But anyway, so I realized at that point at 17 years old, I know Jack Diddle about my faith. And I said, gosh, to tell you the truth, I don't know if I would be able to tell you the seven commandments or the seven sacraments or the 10 commandments.
Nailed it.
Yes.
Nailed it.
I don't know if I would. I don't know if I'd be able to do that. But anyway, so that opened the door for me that I have to learn my faith, and grabbing some old text, old books, I started learning my faith. And so my junior, senior year, I started learning more because of Father. So I think he's probably the instrument that probably got me to where I am today. I begin to realize, my goodness, the you know, 1 hour a week, and maybe the way we presented it or whatever wasn't cutting it for all, you know, these kids at home, you know, just 1 hour a week, PSR night. Well, then I graduate. I go to Coffeyville. I see the signs for VBS, Vacation Bible School. And I said, gosh, we need to have a response to that. Lo and behold, I come back to the farm after, you know, some time, and I was asked to teach religious ed myself, to teach seventh graders. I'm 20, 21 years old.
That's a hard age to teach. I
fell in love. I fell in love. I was really? Like, this is so awesome because they're real smart, Alex. And, you know, and anyway.
It does kind of make sense would be the one person in the world I've ever met who likes teaching seventh graders.
Oh, it was awesome. Awesome. So anyway, so it was just so cool. I was elated. And we just really hammered out a lot of the faith, a lot of the teachings of the church. And I would quiz them and stuff like that, have fun games and stuff like that. It was just cool. At the same time, I'm also taking adult religious ed classes with the priest there with about maybe, I don't know, 10, 15 people. And so I kind of share some of the stories that I had with the CCD class. And, you know, and a lot of those people there, their kids were in my class, you know. So, but anyway, so Father and I, then I started getting, you know, speaking with a priest, and we kind of formed a relationship. It was pretty cool. Just he kind of kept encouraging me. Here's another book. Here's another book. And I just began to start reading and reading and reading. So that's kind of like all set up for probably, I should say, that initial call. And that happened in the spring of 86. A lot of people don't maybe realize this, but I was part ownership with a family in a dairy farm. And we milked 3 times a day. So the guy who worked the night shift, he would get the work at 7, get the milkers on at least by 8, and he'd be done by midnight or so by the time he cleaned up and stuff. That same guy, we slept in a milk barn. And
What?
Milk barn, you know, the barn.
Okay, it's just like a barn.
It's a barn. It's concrete,
like a special
though. It's concrete, and it has heat and water, running water. So, yeah, sorry.
There's no recliners out there. Yeah.
No. I grew up on a cul-de-sac in Northwest Wichita. So you're going to have to explain.
It's like a garage, but with stalls.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, one part of the barn is where, you know, is where we would kind of, we just put a mat on the floor, and eventually we got bunk beds and stuff like that. But we just had a mat on the floor, and that's where we slept. And we slept for 4 hours because you had to get up at 3:30, get the milkers on at 4, and be done by, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock. And so that's what I did. I slept in a milk barn for 3.5 years. And then I'd have day shift times, and then had night shift times. But anyway, so then we also start milking at noon. You know, so there was my other brother. Now, he would do the day shift when I was doing night, and I would do the day when he was doing night. So, I mean, we would kind of trade off. But anyway, so that was pretty huge because we had no money at all. And we just didn't know which way to turn because we never hired any help. So I went 3 years. He went longer. My brother went longer, but I went 3 years without a day off. And milking cows is a 24/7 kind of thing, 7 days a week for sure. But anyway, so my brother took a weekend off, and it was like, oh my gosh, how are we going to do that? So that was in 85. And then in 86, he says, Bernie, you got to go on this retreat. And back then it was called Search, I think. I think they changed it later to Sojourn for young adults, single young adults. Anyway, so I went on this retreat in the spring, April of 86. And wow. It kind of rocked my world because, I don't know, how should I say, it was a good retreat, but at the same time, when I started writing my responses to it, to some of the talks, that was the format they had a talk, and then you wrote, the people at my table asked me to give the response for the table. Every single presentation that was given, maybe with the exception of the last one, but anyway, I was like, whoa, this is weird, right? I was approached at that retreat by this couple, Frank and Nevis Jelic.
You just made that name up.
The Jelics, from Yugoslavia.
Oh, wow.
And they had gone to Medjugorje, and they invited me to go. Now, in the meantime, I'm still, so I'm working all the time, you know, busting anywhere 15, 20-hour days. I mean, it was fun. But after that retreat, it was like, whoa, there's something more here. And I know the priest and I started going to dinner a little bit more. He started talking about vocations. And I told him, no, the farm would never be able to survive without me. And he said, and he said, no, that's not true. That's not true.
Who is this priest?
Father Charlie Steimel.
Okay.
Now,
Steimel
was if he was alive today, he'd be about 100 some years.
Okay.
But he was a World War II vet.
Wow.
And he was in communications in the army running communication relays through China. I mean, he had stories. And of course, he was black belt. And I mean, he was Amazing guy. Amazing.
He's Pastor at Clonmel.
Pastor Clonmel. Yes. Anyway, so we would just whine with stories and whatever. And oh my goodness, we had a great time. I had a great time. Anyway, so he says he kept asking me to consider going to seminary. And I said, no, I can't do it. Can't do it. Well, then I went to Medjugorje in October of 86. And the whole purpose of me going, now again, I'm gone for 10 days. I had to make arrangements back home to make sure all the work is getting done and whatever. Because nobody, we never took time off. By this time, we're doing a little bit better financially. So anyway, so okay, we got somebody in to cover me. I went on that pilgrimage with one idea. I have to find out if I'm supposed to go to seminary. And one of the things that Father Steimel did for me too, he says, going to the seminary is not being a priest.
Yep.
He says, is God calling you to the seminary? Now, God calling you to priesthood, that's what you figure out when you go to seminary. But he says, is God calling you to the seminary? You got to give him that time. Anyway.
It's good advice.
I bucked him. Well, finally, I said, okay, God, should I go to the seminary?
How old are you about this time when you go on
21.
21, okay.
Yeah, 21. And there is a custom at Clonmel in those days that, and St. John's Clonmel is the Holy Land. You know, I mean, it's
yeah, of course,
everything.
One of several.
Yeah, yes. But anyway, so there was a custom in October and May, the Knights of Columbus would lead the rosary before Mass. Not any other months, just October and May. And all the Knights of Columbus took that on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so I get back towards the end of October. And of course, you know, they asked me, I was a knight and they asked me to lead the rosary. And I did. But then also November came up and there's nobody leading the rosary. And I asked Father, I said, Father, do you mind if I, you know, lead the rosary if I get there early enough? And he goes, sure, okay. I asked him then, why don't we do it year round? And he says, well, you could do that if you wanted to, you know. And I said, well, I can just talk to the Knights and the Knights of Columbus and we can put this together. He says, nope. And you have to know Father Steimel. He was very German and just nope. And he says, unless you involve the entire parish, not just the Knights, involve the whole parish, then it's not going to happen. I said, okay, all right. So I said, well, okay, I'll call it. You know, we had three masses on a weekend. I mean, 15 rosary leaders. He wanted one for every mass, all just so everybody would just say it once a month. I said, okay. He says, no, then I need 10 substitutes to sub for each other. And I said, what, you're crazy? Father, we're 125 families, and you want me to get 25 people? And he says, well, if you can't do it, then forget the whole thing. Oh.
How much of your life has been motivated by people telling you?
You can't do it.
So I said, okay. Now, I did something that I want every listener to know. You probably shouldn't do this. I made a deal with Mary.
Okay.
And I said, Mary, if I could pull this off before December 12th, the Feast of Our Lady Guadalupe, because we're going to start it January 1st.
And it's celebrated huge in Clonmel, Our Lady Guadalupe.
Not really. Not really. But it was the nearest Marian feast.
Okay.
I said, is it
Immaculate Conception?
Well,
before that?
I guess I didn't think of that.
All right.
I didn't
Guadalupe
think
is.
Yeah. So is again, big. Keep in mind, I'm a little bit ignorant on the faith.
No, right.
But anyway, so if I can do this by Guadalupe, I will go to the seminary for 1 year. And again, there's no cell phones. There's no email. The communication was you had to get home from work or at whatever time people would get home from work normally. And then you would sit down and you start calling them. So I had maybe 1 hour window here, 1 hour window here, so towards the end of November, all the way to December 12th, I was calling and I had a list of the parishioners, the families, and they all said yes.
Hmm.
So I'm coordinating, you know, here's the 5:30 mass. Here's the 8 o'clock mass. Here's the 10 o'clock mass or whatever the times were. And they all said, yep, we'll do that. No problem. Yep. And then I called this guy and he says, No. He says, the one guy turned me down. It was my last call to fill it was 11 o'clock mass, to fill the 11 o'clock time slot. And he says, no, he says, my wife just had a baby and I just don't foresee us getting there early. And he says, besides Bernie, he says, I'm not Catholic. I said, what do you mean you're not Catholic?
And you live in Clonmel.
Yes. I mean, he was at mass every week. I mean, all the time with his wife, but at that time he wasn't Catholic. So we kind of laughed about that. But anyway, so then I made one more phone call and this guy said, boom, yes. And so every single person I called said yes. They would take one of those times, and all the times were fitting together. All their schedules and the mass schedule was all fitting together. I had 15 people for the general, and then I had 10 for substitutes, and I put it all together, and that final phone call, boom, it was there, and it was December 12th.
Wow. So when you do that, like, are you in at that point? Like, or are you making deals to not join seminary? Like, are you saying, hey, okay, when I'm going to follow through with this?
When I hit that December 12th, I kind of forgot about
the deal.
The day. No, I forgot about the day. Okay. I remember the deal, but I forgot about the days. I was just trying to get, and again, I keep in mind, I only have a couple hours window every day to make these phone calls. So it was like, boom. And all of a sudden that last one's filled. And I was kind of like, boom, yes, I got it done. And what was the date? The date was December 12th. It's like, shoot. So I gave this list, all the contact information for the secretary, gave it to Father and the secretary at the church. And I sat down with Father. I said, Father, here's the deal. I told him the deal I made with Mary. Well, he just grinned ear to ear. He says, well, here you go on that. So we started that. And again, this is pretty small little thing, but it was just kind of this confirmation that, all right.